another program of Savoir Faire. My name is Madani Faruja and I will be your hostess during these programs. This program is being brought to you by the History of Art Department, University of Malta, under the coordination of Dr. Giuseppe Scambri Bonacci, who is also the Artistic Director of the MDINA Contemporary Art Biennale 2015. You can also view images of the objects that we will be discussing during the program by accessing a website built specifically for this program. The website is as follows: www.melfarugia.wix.com/savoirfaire. That's www.melfarugia.wix.com/savoirfaire. Welcome to episode 8 of the series, and today we will be discovering more about 3D printing, and we will mention some of its uses, focusing on design and art. To help us discover more about the technicalities of 3D printing, or actually, to be more correct, I should use the term 3D layering, we have a special guest with us today. We have David Andrews, who runs an outlet which offers 3D printing services. So, David, tell us something about you, and how did you get involved in the 3D printing world?
Well, I was sitting at home, and I was researching, I was on the internet, and I saw this 3D printing stuff, and I thought, wow, why don't I already have one of these? So I bought one, and now I'm selling the service of printing the actual items.
Okay. We can start a bit by discovering what is 3D printing. Because, well, probably many people heard the term 3D printing, but still it's not very clear for many. So how does it work?
Okay. Basically, we would do is we would take a file, so anything in an STL, OBJ, or DAE format, for example, and we would put it into a program called a slicer, which would translate the information into usable codes for the printer, and we would save it as a G-code file. And then the printer would map out an area that it's going to lay down some material, and over layers and layers, it will eventually build the object that was in the original file.
But how are these designs? So, for example, if I want to print a replica of a normal glass.
Okay, there's many ways to get the file. For example, if you don't know how to 3D model yourself, you could go online onto a website, for example, Thingiverse, and it's kind of like Google, but for free 3D files. So many of them are really good and able to be 3D printed. Many of them are not. Because they're free, people aren't giving out the best of their ability, I guess. But other than that, we can scan items, and then we can get a 3D representation of them, or the last is, I guess, you could make it yourself at home. Or we could make it for you.
And can we describe how this 3D printer looks like?
Well, they all look different, but I guess the most basic way to describe them is kind of like a microwave with open sides that after a few hours pops out a usable item.
Okay, and I guess there is a jet which is kind of supported on a motorized arm, which...
A jet, right. Depending, there's many different types of 3D printing. Talking about FDM, which is the type that we use, we would have something called an extruder, which is held on a gantry, which is moved around on the... what would it be, the X and Y axis, I guess, on two rails, and then that would move it around the build plate so it's able to lay down the material. Other ones, such as powder printers, use a very similar method, although I'm not exactly sure of how the extruder works on that, but there's no jet as such, I believe, in FDM.
And the objects that are 3D printed, what materials can be achieved? Is it just kind of plastic or...?
Well, we at the moment are printing in multiple different materials such as plastic, carbon fiber, metal, something which isn't exactly wood, but we have something which is 20% wood and 20% bamboo. We have copper infill as well. We also have bronze infill. Yeah, there's definitely quite a few materials to print with.
Okay, and for all those following us on the website, image number one shows an average 3D printer, let's put it that way, and image number two shows a 3D printed sculpture with an extremely complex texture. And how long does it take to have an object produced in a 3D printer? And of course, I can imagine it depends on the size of the object and on the material, maybe, and the resolution, which maybe you can tell us a bit more about. So let's aim at an object 20 by 20 centimeters to have an idea, kind of.
I see. How long would it take to make that?
An approximation.
Yeah. Okay. So on the lowest settings, because we can adjust multiple things, as I said, the resolution, the infill, as well as the print speed, things like that. I guess on the lowest settings, you could probably make one of those in about 2.5 hours, something like that. And on the higher settings, well, that could take easily over a day.
Wow. Easily.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So,
but there would be a big difference in the quality between.
Yeah, I guess so. For now, for the time being, this technology is more focused on the to create a one-off, not for mass production, since it's quite time-consuming and...
Yeah. The problem with injection molding is when working with those kind of companies, they always want you to buy, for example, a certain amount worth of material from them, or you have to make so many of a certain mold before the price becomes worth it. Whereas the point of 3D printing is that each person can get a completely unique item and not have to pay for the molds. And every time they come back, they can have a completely different one every time.
And how old is this technology? I think it's been around for quite some years.
Yeah. It's actually, I can't remember the exact date, but I know it's definitely over 20 years old.
Wow.
Quite old. Originally started with things similar to plotters doing a very similar job, but only now patents are running out, they're becoming more affordable, and they've only become actually viable to be used in a business in the last 5 years maximum.
So when it comes to functional parts, and I'm going to explain what I mean by functional parts. For example, I got to know about this 3D printing technology myself while I was watching an episode of CSI. And the murder weapon in the episode was a 3D printed gun.
Oh, okay, cool.
And I was really intrigued by this 3D printing. So, in reality, how far are we, or maybe it's still very possible to print something which functions, which, you know, can be used, like a gun, for example?
I haven't seen that particular episode, but I heard of another episode where they did something similar. They printed a key, I believe, a replica of a key.
Oh, okay.
And they got in somebody's house or something like this. Well, the key we definitely can't do yet, especially not off. I believe they just had a picture of the key and went from that. We're definitely nowhere near that yet. However, we can make guns because they don't need to be as precise. But I'm not sure if you've seen the Vice documentary, maybe online now. Okay. Over there, they had guns and they said they had managed to fire up to 500 rounds out of parts that they had had in those 3D printed guns. But the guns themselves weren't 3D printed. Only one part at a time was, such as the magazine, for example.
And then they're assembled and...
The thing is, when you make a completely 100% 3D printed gun out of plastic, at least, then as far as I understand, they're only good from 1 to 5 shots, and they're super dangerous, and you've got more chance of shooting yourself than anybody else.
Yes, in fact, in this CSI episode, when he used it the first time, and he managed to kill the person, but the gun exploded in his hand.
Yeah,
and that's why he was caught, actually. So, it backfired, literally.
You need a different type of manufacturing in order to make things to withstand that much pressure.
And what about, you know, when we replicate artifacts, or how endangered are brands, for example, like Lego?
I
think it's pretty easy to replicate it, and how accurate to the real thing can 3D printing go?
Okay, as far as accuracy to the real thing, we can definitely get, I'd say, 90-something percent accuracy easily. We can print down to 20 microns. So that's pretty close. They're 1,000 microns to a millimeter. And I'm not even sure whether they have the quality standards at LEGO's factory for anything outside of that. But you've got to keep in mind that they're working with injection molding costs, so they make hundreds upon thousands of pieces of LEGO, if not millions. And they're paying not even pennies per part, whereas if you come to a 3D printer, you're obviously going to be paying per piece.
Mm-hmm.
And then the price of one compared to how much you're going to get per one if you buy millions is substantially, you know, higher.
I mean, I'm just saying LEGO as an example, but of course, for example, maybe these souvenirs, like, I don't know, maybe a replica of a souvenir of a Tower of Pisa. I think that's probably...
Oh, okay. Yeah, like these little things you get when you go on holiday and stuff. Yeah, yeah. I mean, price-wise, they'd be about the same if you'd mm-hmm. pay about €5 for a little leaning Tower of Pisa in Italy or wherever, then I guess you'd pay that much here as well.
Yeah, I mean, David was showing us like a 20-centimeter Tower of Pisa. I think that could be like over €12 probably.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah,
well...
Because these souvenirs are getting more expensive and expensive.
Yeah, yeah, well, it all depends on the settings that we put mm-hmm. on, because we have the different resolutions, so we can print at 20 microns, but we can also print as low as 300 microns, which is about 3 pieces of paper, something mm-hmm. like that for a layer resolution.
Okay. Actually, image number 3 that I put on the website shows a replica of the famous chair design, the Eames Lounge. For those of you who have been following the series regularly, will probably remember the section we had about this chair. So, a replica of this chair using a scale of 1:20 was 3D printed, and it looks really perfect, like the real thing. And I put an image for you there on the website. Are there any health risks in 3D printing? Because, I mean, this is like, from what I am imagining, it's molten plastic and chemicals.
Yeah, I guess there are. Yeah, definitely. I wouldn't say there are any major health risks, but my hands and my fingerprints were definitely considerably different before I started doing this. The use of heated print beds, they go up to, we use them at about 90 degrees Celsius when we're printing with certain mm-hmm. materials.
What do you mean by heated?
Okay, the bottom of the printer mm-hmm. has something that we call a build plate, and that's where we would build whatever piece of equipment is going to be built.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's not heated when working with certain materials such as ABS, then the item can start to curl or become warped. And to avoid that, we need to use that. But when removing these pieces or when adjusting anything whilst they're being printed, you got to keep in mind that this thing is still very, very hot. And so I've many times put my hands down there. And yeah, that wasn't cool.
While I was researching 3D printing on quite a number of websites and articles, this technology was referred to as the third industrial revolution. What are your views about this? Or we're still maybe too far away from this?
I don't know. I don't know about any revolutions, but if anyone watches Star Trek, they seem to be moving away from buying stuff in bulk from companies and making their own things. And slowly, slowly, I see that we will all become mm-hmm. a lot more self-sufficient with these materials. I mean, we're now looking into making our own plastic as well. So once we've done that, there's not too many other things I will need to go to any other companies for at all. I mean, we already make our own designs and have everything else in-house already. So in time, I think we'll all get there. But at the moment, the price to be able to do this is quite high, and hence why there are only certain people in business that are mm-hmm. doing this and not all of us.
Have you worked on any interesting projects lately?
Well, I quite like the idea of comic book stuff, and I'm quite into video games and these things, and a lot of the times we'll see, me and my friends will be playing, we'll see, I don't know, say a weapon or a character's mask or something that we like, and we can't find any replicas of it online, and so we'll think, right, well, let's make our own version of this, and now we can 3D print it, and then we will have something in real life, and we wouldn't have had to wait very long for it, just a few hours, and we've got, you know, the thing in our hands, that's great. Other than that, simple things around the house are great. Like, I believe last week I was using one of those magnetic, like, iPad kind of cover things,
mm-hmm.
and the thing keeps falling off of me, so I thought, right, time to print myself a stand. An hour later, I've got my stand there, it's all good.
Yeah, that must be really nice to, you know, be able to print whatever you feel like having right there and then.
Yeah, definitely. It's pretty cool. Pretty cool.
So, David, how are exactly the designs achieved to, you know, for anything that one wants to print?
Let's take scanning, for example. You mentioned you've got a microphone there. So, can I have that microphone? Thank you. We would take whatever the item is, and we would use a scanner. We actually have a mobile scanner, so, for example, I don't have it on me now, but it would just look like me walking around this item, this microphone, with my phone, and then we will have a 3D representation of it on the phone, which we can manipulate and move around and stuff. What's cool is we can actually do the entire room that we're in, and then we can take measurements from sides of the room, so, you know, you point at one corner and another corner, and it'll tell you that's about 3 meters or whatever it is. You can also move around it like a video game, which is great. But then you can send that information to the computer, or if you have a Wi-Fi enabled printer, you could send it straight there. But you're probably going to need to clean it up a little bit. Plug up any holes that would have not been scanned, because you need to get the full thing that you're scanning in order to have the full 3D model of it. And, yeah, make sure that it's all good, and then you can print that out, and you're all good. You choose what kind of resolution you want, whether you want it to be lifelike detail, in which case you would print at something like 100 microns, or all the way to 20.
Yeah, can you explain more into this? What do you mean by
microns?
This resolution?
Yeah. Okay, right. So there's 1,000 microns to a millimeter, and the way we print is layers. So, for example, imagine you're going to print a sphere. If you print that at 300 microns, just for the sake of argument, there would be 100 lines in it. But then if you print that at 20 microns, then there would be like 1,000 lines in there.
Okay.
The more lines at thinner heights, or at shorter heights rather, will lead to something that has a lot less bumps on it, a lot more smoother, and just overall the detail will come out a lot better, and you'd have more of a showpiece rather than a draft piece to do with prototyping, for example.
And the material being used, is it just one color, or it mixes, like when we print in color, kind of?
We can print in multiple colors, but we can only print in one color at a time when using FDM. We do have the ability to print with two with a certain machine. However, this is, I highly recommend printing separate pieces in separate colors when using this technology.
And then you can assemble it.
Yeah. We can actually print items up to any size. We have someone at the moment who's ordered a ship which is about a meter long. And we don't have any printers that are a meter long, so it will be built in sections and then it will be adjoined afterwards.
Yeah, sounds like lots of fun as well,
eh? fun. I don't know about fun. It's fun when the printers work. It's fun when you're printing for yourself. It's not that fun when you're, you know, having to stay up and watch the printer. They're not very clever, these printers. They are very stupid machines. They're only as smart as the people that attend them, so I guess that doesn't say too much about me. But no, we have a pretty decent success rate. That being said, it does take quite a lot of skill to be able to use these, so hence why we haven't seen them in everybody's home yet.
So, David, have you taken part in any events? Because, for example, I got to meet you and know about you from the comics convention this year.
Yeah. We've been to, so far this year at least, or last year now, the Malta Comic Expo as well as Comic-Con. We've already got Comic-Con, Malta Comic Expo, and I believe it's Malta Sci-Fi Con lined up for next year. We're always keeping an eye out for other events that we could go to. But I will say that for each different event, we always print our items themed for the occasion. So as you can imagine, the Sci-Fi Con will be receiving lots of future-y space stuff and, you know, things along those lines, and likewise.
Okay, so thanks a lot, David, for all the information. And if someone would want to know more, can you give us a website or a Facebook page?
Yes, of course. We are Malta 3D Printing. You can find us on Facebook, and all the relevant information will be over there. Also, you can speak to us through our Facebook on the live chat, and we are 24 hours, so we will respond to anyone that's got something urgent for the next day, for example. We got you covered there.
That's great service. Thanks a lot, David.
Thank you.
I remind you that you can follow images of what we are mentioning by accessing the site melfarrugia.wix.com/savoirfaire and go under Programs tab and choose program number 8. Well, if one just performs a quick Google search about 3D printing, an infinite number of articles show up. Nowadays, 3D printing is being used in almost everything that one can imagine, from creating parts of a human skull, to shoes and fashion accessories, and there are even ongoing experiments in printing food. Food that you can actually eat.
You cooked a delicious dinner. Hai preparato una cena deliziosa. Now you try.
Too many scenarios to mention everything, but I would like to point out two circumstances where the 3D printing was used quite interestingly. One case in point was a fashion show held by the Griffith University in Australia, where all the clothes exhibited during the fashion show were 3D printed. This was held in May 2014 and was described as a spectacular marriage between fashion and technology. And the organizer of this event, Dr. Jennifer Loy, from the same university, mentions how this incredible fashion is the perfect demonstration of the technology's creative possibilities. The dresses featured are not really everyday dresses, but more something you would expect Lady Gaga to be wearing. The fashion show, amongst other designers, featured also the creations of award-winning Malaysian designer Melinda Loy, who delves into the structure and the nature of birds, and her dramatic work is wearable art. And you can see a photo of one of these dresses in image number 5. The technology is still far from being able to print normal wearable clothes at home, but just imagine in the morning you can't find anything right to wear and you just print a new dress. And probably a new shoes, and a matching handbag. Another interesting case where 3D printing was used is for a very particular exhibition at the Prado Museum in Madrid. As we all know, fortunately and unfortunately, in museums we find the rules, no photographs, and of course no touching. I shall be giving you some information about this exhibition from the website 3dprint.com. This exhibition that we're talking about is called Touching the Prado and is aimed to give sight-impaired visitors more access to great works of art through an unusual pathway. They can touch printed recreations of great works of art to their heart's content on specific exhibits designed for just this purpose. The kind of 3D printing used for this exhibition is called Didu. And here is some information about this Didu. What is this Didu? Didu is a technique created by Bilbao, Spain-based design agency Estudios Durero, which describes the technique on their website as relief printing, which allows us to get closer to art in a different way, by adding volume and texture to what is usually a flat representation. Or in the cases of paintings with texture, paintings are off limits for touching because touch can alter the painting's sensitive constitution. As the Washington Post had described the Didu technique, it takes about 40 hours to achieve the detailed effects of volume and texture in a high-resolution photograph of an original artwork. After the printing, it takes another 12 hours to apply a chemical that brings volume to otherwise flat surfaces. The outcome is an original interpretation of the original, a tactile image that can bring out entirely different dimensions in art that all can enjoy. The exhibition features Lidou reprints of six painting masterpieces from its collection, including Velázquez's The Triumph of Bacchus and Apollo and the Forge of Vulcan, El Greco's Nobleman with His Hand on His Chest, and Goya's The Parasol. The paintings are photographed and 3D printed to create almost a textual guide to the original painting. By touching one's way through an artwork, this item paired can create a mental map of the entire piece and potentially develop a more emotional response to the experience as well. The exhibition is running through June 28, 2015, and I have included some images from this exhibition and also a link for a clip showing how these were created, all under Program 8 tab. Stop here for today, and thank you for joining us. I would like to send my regards and thanks to some followers and fans of the program: Michael Bohajar, Victoria Juice, Rosanne Mikalev, David Saliba, Carl Matthew Camilleri, Nicholas Schwierer, who is our number one fan, and Miriam O, who follows us all the way from Chile. May I remind you that these programs are available on the Campus FM website, which is MaltaUniversityBroadcasting.com, and you will be able to find all the past programs from this website. And this program was brought to you by the History of Art Department under the coordination of Dr. Giuseppe Scambri Bonacci, the Artistic Director of the Mbina Biennale 2015. And also, for more info about the Biennale, you can visit www.mbinabiennale.org. I invite you to join us next week.